flu season is upon us. Which type will we worry about this year? And what kind of shots will we be told to take? Remember the swine flu scare of 1976? That was the year the U.S. government told us all that swine flu could turn out to be a killer that could spread across the nation. And Washington decided that every man, woman, and child in the nation should get a shot to prevent a nationwide outbreak, a pandemic. Well, 46 million of us obediently took the shot. And now 4,000 Americans are claiming damages from Uncle Sam amounting to $3.5 billion because of what happened when they took that shot. By far the greatest number of the claims, two-thirds of them, are for neurological damage or even death, allegedly triggered by the flu shot. We pick up the story back in 1976 when the threat posed by the swine flu virus seemed very real indeed.
This virus was the cause of a pandemic in 1918 and 1919 that resulted in over 500,000 deaths in the United States, as well as 20 million deaths around the world.
See how easy it is to...
Thus, the U.S. government's publicity machine was cranked into action to urge all America to protect itself against the swine flu menace.
Influenza is serious business. During major flu epidemics, millions of people are sick and thousands die. Well, this year you can get protection. The vaccines are safe, easy to take, and they can protect you against flu. So roll up your sleeve. Protect yourself.
One of those who did roll up her sleeve was Judy Roberts. She was perfectly healthy, an active woman, when in November of 1976, she took her shot. 2 weeks later, she says, she began to feel a numbness starting up her legs.
I joked about it at that time. I said, I'll be numb to the knees by Friday if this keeps up. By the following week, I was totally paralyzed.
So completely paralyzed, in fact, that they had to operate on her to enable her to breathe. And for 6 months, Judy Roberts was a quadriplegic. The diagnosis? A neurological disorder called Guillain-Barré syndrome, GBS for short. These neurological diseases are little understood. They affect people in different ways. As you can see in these home movies taken by a friend, Judy Roberts' paralysis confined her mostly to a wheelchair for over a year. But this disease can even kill. Indeed, there are 300 claims now pending from the families of GBS victims who died, allegedly as a result of the swine flu shot. In other GBS victims, the crippling effects diminish and all but disappear. But for Judy Roberts, progress back to good health has been painful and partial.
Now, I notice that your smile, Judy, is a little bit constricted.
Yes, it is.
Is it different from what it used to be?
Very different. I have a greatly decreased mobility in my lips. And I can't drink through a straw on the right-hand side. I can't blow out birthday candles. I don't whistle anymore, for which my husband is grateful.
It may be a little difficult for you to answer this question, but have you recovered as much as you are going to recover?
Yes, this is it.
So you will now have a legacy of braces on your legs for the rest of your life?
Yes, the weakness in my hands will stay and the leg braces will stay.
So Judy Roberts and her husband have filed a claim against the U.S. government. They're asking $12 million, though they don't expect to get nearly that much.
Judy, why did you take the flu shot?
I'd never taken any other flu shots, but I felt like this was going to be a major epidemic. And the only way to prevent a major epidemic of a really deadly variety of flu was for everybody to be immunized.
Where did this so-called deadly variety of flu, where did it first hit back in 1976? It began right here at Fort Dix in New Jersey in January of that year when a number of recruits began to complain of respiratory ailments, something like the common cold. An army doctor here sent samples of their throat cultures to the New Jersey Public Health Lab to find out just what kind of bug was going around here. One of those samples was from a private David Lewis who had left his sickbed to go on a forced march. Private Lewis had collapsed on that march, and his sergeant had revived him by mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. But the sergeant showed no signs of illness. A few days later, Private Lewis died.
If this disease is so potentially fatal that it's going to kill a young, healthy man, a middle-aged school teacher doesn't have prayer.
The New Jersey lab identified most of those soldiers' throat cultures as the normal kind of flu virus going around that year, but they could not make out what kind of virus was in the culture from the dead soldier and from four others who were sick. So they sent those cultures to the Federal Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, Georgia, for further study. A few days later, they got the verdict. Swine flu.
But that much publicized outbreak of swine flu at Fort Dix involved only Private Lewis, who died, and those four other soldiers who recovered completely without the swine flu shot.
If I had known at that time that the boy had been in a sick bed, got up, went out on a forced march, and then collapsed and died, I would never have taken a shot.
The rationale for our recommendation was not on the basis of the death of a single individual, but it was on the basis that when we do see a change in the characteristics of the influenza virus, it is a massive public health problem in this country.
Dr. David Spencer, then head of the CDC, the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, is now in private industry. He devised the swine flu program, and he pushed it.
You began to give flu shots to the American people in October of 76.
October 1st.
By that time, how many cases of swine flu around the world had been reported?
There had been several reported, but none confirmed. There had been cases in Australia that were reported by the press, by the news media. There were cases in...
None confirmed. Did you ever uncover any other outbreaks of swine flu anywhere in the world?
No.
Now, nearly everyone was to receive the shot in a public health facility where a doctor might not be present. Therefore, it was up to the CDC to come up with some kind of official consent form, giving the public all the information it needed about the swine flu shot. This form stated that the swine flu vaccine had been tested. What it didn't say was that after those tests were completed, the scientists developed another vaccine. And that was the one given to most of the 46 million who took the shot. That vaccine was called X-53A.
Was X-53A ever field tested?
I can't say. I would have to...
It wasn't.
I don't know.
Well, I would think that you're in charge of the program.
I would have to check the records. I haven't looked at this in some time.
The information form, the consent form, was also supposed to warn people about any risks of serious complications following the shot. But did it?
No, I had never heard of any reactions other than a sore arm, fever, this sort of thing.
Judy Roberts' husband, Gene, also took the shot.
Yes, I looked at that document. I signed it. Nothing on this said I was going to have a heart attack or I'd get Guillain-Barré, which I'd never heard of.
What if people from the government, from the Center for Disease Control, what if they had indeed known about it? What would be your feeling?
They should have told us.
Did anyone ever come to you and say, you know something, fellas? There's the possibility of neurological damage if you get into a mass immunization program.
No.
No one ever did?
No.
Do you know Michael Hatwick?
Yes, mm-hmm.
Dr. Michael Hatwick directed the surveillance team for the swine flu program at the CDC. His job was to find out what possible complications could arise from taking the shot and to report his findings to those in charge.
Did you know ahead of time, Dr. Hatwick, that there had been case reports of neurological disorders, neurological illness, apparently associated with the injection of influenza vaccine?
Absolutely.
You did?
Yes.
How'd you know that?
By review of the literature.
So you told your superiors, the men in charge of the swine flu immunization program, about the possibility of neurological disorders?
Absolutely.
What would you say if I told you that your superiors say that you never told them about the possibility of neurological complications?
That's nonsense. I can't believe that they would say that they did not know that there were neurological illnesses associated with influenza vaccination. That simply is not true. We did know that.
I've said that Dr. Hatwick had never told me of his feelings on this subject.
That he's lying.
I guess you would have to make that assumption.
Then why does this report from your own agency, dated July 1976, list neurological complications as a possibility?
I think the consensus of the scientific community was that the evidence relating neurologic disorders to influenza immunization was such that they did not feel that this association was a real one.
You didn't feel it was necessary to tell Licking people that information?
I think that over the years we have tried to inform the American people as fully as possible.
As part of informing Americans about the swine flu threat, Dr. Censor's CDC also helped create the advertising to get the public to take the shot.
Let me read to you from one of your own agency's memos planning the campaign to urge Americans to take the shot. The swine flu vaccine has been taken by many important persons, he wrote. Example, President Ford, Henry Kissinger, Elton John, Muhammad Ali, Mary Tyler Moore, Rudolf Nureyev, Walter Cronkite, Ralph Nader, Edward Kennedy, etc., etc. True?
I'm not familiar with that particular piece of paper, but I do know that at least of that group, President Ford did take the vaccination.
Did you talk to these people beforehand to find out if they planned to take the shot?
I did not know.
Did anybody?
I do not know.
Did you get permission to use their names in your campaign?
I do not know.
Mary, did you take a swine flu shot?
No, I did not.
Did you give them permission to use your name saying that you had or were going to?
Absolutely not. Never did.
Did you ask your own doctor about taking the swine flu shot?
Yes, and at the time he thought it might be a good idea. But I resisted it because I was leery of having the symptoms that sometimes go with that kind of inoculation.
So you didn't?
No, I didn't.
Have you spoken to your doctor since?
Yes.
And?
He's delighted that I didn't take that shot.
You're in charge. Somebody's in charge. There are... This is your advertising strategy that I have a copy of here.
Who's it signed by?
This one is unsigned. But you'll acknowledge that it was your baby, so to speak.
It could have been from the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. It could be from CDC. I don't know. I'll be happy to take responsibility for it.
It's been 3 years now since you fell ill with GBS. Right.
Right.
Has the federal government, in your estimation, played fair with you about your claim?
No, I don't think so. It seems to be dragging on and on and on, and really no end in sight that I can see at this point.
With respect to the cases of Guillain-Barré, allegedly...
Former Secretary of HEW Joseph Califano, too, was disturbed that there was no end in sight. So a year and a half ago, he promised that Uncle Sam would cut the bureaucratic red tape for victims suffering from GBS and would pay up quickly.
We shouldn't hold them to an impossible or too difficult standard of proving that they were hurt. Even if we pay a few people a few thousand dollars that might not have deserved it, I think justice requires that we promptly pay those people who do deserve it.
Well, who's making the decision to be so hard-nosed about settling?
Well, I assume the Justice Department is.
Griffin Bell, before he left?
Well, the Justice Department agreed to the statement I made. It was cleared word for word with the lawyers in the Justice Department by my HEW lawyers.
And that statement said, in effect?
That statement said that we should pay Guillain-Barré claims without regard to whether the federal government was negligent if they resulted from the swine flu shot.
I think the government knows it's wrong.
If it drags out long enough, that people will just give up. Let it go.
I am a little more adamant in my thoughts than my wife is, because I told Judy to take the shot. She wasn't going to take it, and she never had shots. And I'm mad with my government because they knew the facts, but they didn't release those facts because if they had released them, the people wouldn't have taken it. And they can come out tomorrow and tell me there's going to be an epidemic, and they can drop off like flies next to me. I will not take another shot that my government tells me to take.
Meantime, Judy Roberts and some 4,000 others like her are still waiting for their day in court.
Ladies and gentlemen, what you've just heard, Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes, obviously a good number of years ago, talking about the propaganda of 1976. What is this? 30 years ago? 86? 90? Yeah. 30 some odd years ago from the night we're airing this broadcast, where we find that the machine was geared up to sell people on the importance and the need for getting the swine flu shot. These are, my friends, challenging times. We need to stay calm and think things through. Not just panic, not just react. Fear, panic, and emotional reaction got us into this mess. It's certainly not going to get us out. We also need to realize here and now that we have long crossed the line into a fully fledged fascist dictatorship. It has hidden itself to most people thus far, but it's about to lift the veil. It is no longer, you see, an option to do nothing or passively acquiesce to authority out of fear or apathy, or at least it's not if we care about our freedoms and, most importantly, those of our children and grandchildren who have to live most of their entire lives under a global jackboot of sheer undiluted evil. The word evil, of course, is much overused in this society today, and I don't say it lightly, but we are dealing with evil in the sense that the word is the reverse of live or live. Those behind the conspiracy to turn humans into little more than computer terminals are anti-life. They have no respect for it, no empathy for those who suffer the consequences of their actions, no matter how appalling. We've been warning of what's been coming for over a decade and a half now on the airwaves. It's not coming anymore. It's here. No more excuses from anyone, please. We have to deal with it. We have to draw a line in the sand and say no more. Never was this more important than with the conspiracy to force this new variation of swine flu vaccinations upon the global population. The swine flu virus was created in a laboratory to generate mass panic with the specific intention of forcing everyone to have the vaccine. Problem, reaction, solution. If you concoct and release a virus and then implement a clearly long-planned mass vaccination program, there can only be one sensible conclusion. Swine flu is not the biggest danger here. It's the vaccine. The scale and speed of the planned vaccination program is insane, given that the overwhelming majority of those who have contracted the virus have had very mild symptoms. Dr. Peter Holden of the Rothschild-controlled British Medical Association said that although swine flu was not causing serious illness, they were eager to start a mass vaccination campaign, beginning with what they call priority groups. This, my friends, is not about public health. It never was. Those administering the vaccinations have no clue what is in them or their potential effect. They are just repeaters thinking what they are told to think and doing what they are told to do. Only those at the core of the conspiracy and those who bother to research it know what the game is. Get your flu shot. Get your flu shot and get your flu shot. If people are still inclined, after having heard these words, after having listened to this 14 or 15 minute segment out of 60 minutes from Mike Wallace from so many years ago. And I will tell you right now, this thing is well over 20 years old. It could well be pushing 25 years old. The recording that we played for you. But if people are still inclined to let this bunch inject chemical poisons into their body, then all the warnings that can be made will do no good. Our good friend Granny has posted out tons of information on preparing your bodies to reject sickness. But she says she bets she can count on two hands the number who are really doing something about it. You can lead a horse to water, you see, but you cannot make them drink, and you cannot force people, unless you are an armed government agent, to take personal responsibility for their own health simply by eating and drinking things that are good for the human body and to refuse to ingest the things that are known to be bad for us. People are lazy, and they do not want to discipline themselves, no matter what the reason is. So Granny has taken the position of not worrying about these other people. If they prefer to die a painful death, so let it be written. So let it be done. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America. To all those who have chosen to listen this evening, I welcome you to another hour of Perspectives on America. I'm your host and commentator for the hour, Jeffrey Bennett, and you are listening to this program.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
But my friends, we are facing an era of bad medicine. By advice, by protocol, by a tyrannical fascist government. Let me share with you, over the course of the last few days, a wide range of headlines have come to me, articles have come to me. We're going to share bits and pieces of them with you for the balance of this hour. One of them was written by Arnold Ehlert, A-H-L-E-R-T. He says, it's hard to know where to start explaining what a debacle Obamacare is, so let's go with something simple. The president is a liar. And it only took Investors Business Daily about 15 minutes of slogging through the House's version of the health care bill to discover the Whopper. And I ain't talking about a burger that Rodney Allen Rippey pushed 30 years ago. We've spent a fair amount of time over the last week discussing Obamacare, whether it be through columns posted on the Federal Observer, at federalobserver.com, whether it's been here on the airwaves. But there's some things to keep in mind. Barack Hussein Obama promised the American people that even if universal coverage were enacted, they could opt to keep their private health insurance. So maybe someone in our comatose media could ask him about this clause, which Investors Business Daily discovered on page 16 of the 1,018-page bill, which we will make available to each and every one of you who cares to look at it. It states, except as provided in this paragraph, the individual health insurance issuer offering such coverage does not enroll any individual in such coverage if the first effective date of coverage is on or after the first day of the year, the legislation becomes law, end of quote. Real simple language, my friends. This is what it translates into. Whatever company you're currently insured by, you're stuck with for the rest of your life. Change your job where coverage was provided. Decide to work for yourself. Your private provider gets forced out of business because they can't compete with a taxpayer-subsidized government plan. Welcome to Obamacare, whether you like it or not. Of course, the Obama cheerleading squad will say this ain't lying. Oh, really? No, O'Reilly. How many companies do you know that can stay in business if they're forbidden to attract new customers? Wake up, my fellow Americans. Like the cap-and-trade bill before it, Obamacare's primary objective is the massive expansion of government and the resultant destruction of the private sector. You see, it is a calculated power grab by leftist elites who truly believe ordinary Americans need to be led around by their collected noses. Don't forget the ring, baby. It is the insinuation of government bureaucrats into aspects of one's private life on an unprecedented scale. It is the essence of telling grown men and women that you are incapable of making decisions about your own lives without input from political hacks. Memo to Congress. If this plan is so damn good, then give up your current premium health care coverage and enroll in it yourself. Your do as I say, not as I do double standard is the ultimate insult to those of us who know that none of you will bear the consequences of any moronic policies you foist on every other American, which is almost as insulting as knowing most of you won't bother to read the bill before voting on it. This bill is not about health care, not by a mile. This is about power and control being sold as good medicine, just like the cap-and-trade power grab being sold as saving the planet. End of quote. You see, my friends, the only thing Americans need saving from is the group of socialist thugs who have taken over the country right under our very noses. Noses they want to wipe for you with taxpayer-subsidized hankies. Well, amongst some of the other interesting little factors that are going on in healthcare in and around this nation today, that people with HIV or AIDS, regardless of whether they exhibit symptoms, are considered to have a disability. That's right. In 1998, HIV and AIDS were designated no longer as a healthcare issue, but as a disability. And therefore, all of these people are protected by the Americans with Disability Act in their choice of profession. That, according to the Obama administration. Last week, the U.S. Justice Department released a new fact sheet intended to provide guidance for state licensing agencies and occupational training schools. The fact sheet says that individuals with HIV or AIDS who want to become barbers, massage therapists, or home health care assistants, for example, must not be turned away because of their illness. Loretta King, acting assistant general for the Civil Rights Division, says people with HIV or AIDS should not be denied access to their chosen profession because of outdated laws or unfounded stereotypes and fears. According to a Justice Department news release announcing the guidelines, quote, persons with HIV and AIDS unfortunately still face obstacles in obtaining training and state licensure in these occupations because of overly broad state licensure requirements that applicants be free of communicable diseases. And because HIV disease is not communicated through casual contact, excluding individuals with HIV under these licensure requirements is unnecessary and discriminates against these individuals in violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act, the news release said. Well, the Justice Department notes that the ADA gives federal civil rights protections to individuals with disabilities, similar to the protections provided to individuals on the basis of race, color, sex, national origin, age, and or religion. Justice Department further states that an individual is considered to have a disability if he or she has a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits one or more major life activities, has a record of such impairment, or is regarded as having such impairment. Persons with HIV disease, either symptomatic or asymptomatic, have physical impairments that substantially limit one or more major life activities and thus are protected by the ADA. Well, federal protections also extend to people who are discriminated against because they are regarded as being HIV positive. For example, the ADA would protect a person who is denied an occupational license or admission to a school because of a rumor or assumption that he has HIV or AIDS, even if he does not. So now the Justice Department offers the following examples of discrimination against persons with HIV/AIDS. One, a certificate program for health aides having a blanket policy denying admission to anyone with HIV, and a cosmetology school denying admission to an HIV-positive individual because state cosmetology regs require that cosmetologists be free from contagious, communicable, or infectious diseases. And they go on to say, since HIV cannot be transmitted by casual contact, the Justice Department says, quote, the circumstances do not exist for the transmission of HIV in a school or workplace setting, including those involving massage therapy, cosmetology, or home health care services. Well, as we previously mentioned, in 1998, the Supreme Court ruled that HIV infection was a disability covered by the ADA. My friends, I would suggest to you that our troubles are far more deeply saturated upon us than we can ever imagine. When we return, we're going to hear what the Health and Human Services Secretary, he's issued, or he or she, it's a her, Kathleen Sebelius, has issued a new standards for measuring gender. What in the world is that all about? Stay with me. Be right back. Good friend Willie Edwards, it's interesting that we choose this particular song at a point in time where we're discussing those with AIDS or HIV positive who cannot be denied the right to be a barber, a cosmetologist, or home health care aide. And Willie Edwards is talking about slipping through the cracks. Ooh. Well, on top of all of this, coming out of CNSNews.com, and once again at the end of this program this evening, I'll be sending out a copy of tonight's written transcript to those of you who have elected to be on our Perspectives on America list. And ladies and gentlemen, if there are those of you out there listening tonight who find some of the information we're putting out to be of benefit to you, I'm trying more and more to include the URLs for the various different respective columns that we attempt to share on this program with you. I'm doing so more with this program this evening because I've taken little bits and pieces out of the full articles that have been published. The next one coming out of CNS News is entitled Healthcare Bill Directs HHS Secretary, that's Health and Human Services, to develop standards for measuring gender as opposed to male and female. Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, or Health Committee's health care legislation, will give the Health and Human Services Secretary the authority to develop standards of measuring gender. Now, I don't quite understand this, but this is going to be as opposed to using the traditional male and female categories in a database of all who apply or participate in government-run or government-supported health care plans? Wait a minute. In a database of all who apply or participate? Well, according to our understanding of the new Obamacare package, that's going to be all of us, whether we want it or not. How do you measure gender? I mean, biologically, you're either a male or a female. There is no such thing as transgender, cross-dresser, lesbian, gay. What are you going to do with this? This is insanity. Oh, I'm sorry. Does this border on hate speech? It's not. This is called accuracy speech. Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius is required by this new proposed law, the Affordable Health Choices Act, which was voted out of committee on July 15th, to create a database within 1 year of the law's enactment that will include detailed information about those who sign up for government-run or supported health care programs, including their race, ethnicity, socioeconomic status, language, and disabilities. The proposed law states that the database can use the Office of Management and Budget Standards for race and ethnicity measures. But for the collection of gender data, instead of using the categories male and female, the legislation calls for developing standards for the measurement of gender. No, this, honey, this is not the typical 6 inches, 9 inches business. It's got nothing to do with that. For the collection of gender data, instead of using the categories male and female, the legislation calls for developing standards for the measurement of gender. And the language is found on page 410 and 411 of the 615 document under SEC.332, entitled Understanding Health Disparities, Data Collection and Analysis. Now, I know we've not gone maybe far enough to try to explain it. What I'm trying to do is raise a series of questions in your mind tonight, I guess to show you just how off-kilter we have truly gone in this nation. And this healthcare issue, and we discussed some of it yesterday as related to the illegal invasion of America. But some of the things we're discussing tonight are geared more to this insanity of the Obama administration's attempts to dictate to us what, why, when, where, and how we will be able to get medical assistance and medical care. Now, there is a brand new column we posted on the Federal Observer late last night. I like columns like this, ladies and gentlemen, because it was written by a common, everyday, good old, by God, American truck driver. It's called The Case Against Government-Run Healthcare. You want to read that in the Federal Observer right now. So here's the next entry into our little presentation for tonight. Healthcare bill will curb job growth by encouraging small businesses to remain small. That's right. Once again, from CNSnews.com. The Senate version of President Obama's government healthcare overhaul contains a mandate that all businesses provide their employees with health insurance or pay a fine. unless the business employs fewer than 25 people. Critics say the 25-employee benchmark could stifle small business growth by prompting companies to limit themselves to 24 employees. Mandate is called the shared responsibility of employers. And it says that businesses must provide their employees health insurance or else pay an annual fine of $750 per employee per year. That's $375 for each part-time employee. The bill exempts small companies, which are defined as any company that employs fewer than 25 people at any time during the year. Well, I already know ways to get around that, so all you got to do is you take a company like Kettle Moraine, who has an employee base of one anyway, and if all of a sudden I make the determination that I've got to start hiring employees, I take this corporate overbearing and I split it up into three or four different companies and ensure that I have no more than one or two people working in each one of the companies. Now I've hired 10, 12, maybe 25, 30 people that ostensibly are all working for me, but guess what? They're all working for different corporations, so I get away with bloody murder. You think that isn't going to happen? That's exactly what will happen, and I'll help people do it. I'll show them the way to do it. Well, now we come to Christopher Dodd. Christopher Dodd's an interesting bird that's been around far too long, as we all know. He talks about why the health care bill allows federal funding of abortion. He says, we like the idea that people have choices. The Senate version of health care reform, which passed in committee on a 13-10 party line vote last Wednesday, would effectively mandate federal funding of abortion through various insurance coverage mechanisms included in the bill. And when asked about the fact that the bill would allow federal funding of abortion, he said, I think we handle the issue well. We like the idea that people have choices, and indeed, the law of the land permits people to make those choices, and we respect that, and we're going to pursue that. Again, we do not want to discriminate when people have, they have convictions, or moral convictions, or religious convictions, blah, 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 blah. Another namby-pamby, foul-mouthed, scumbucket politician. Shh, hang 'em high, baby. And we, of course, now come to the next segment of our presentation for today. Look, I'm throwing a lot at you. A lot of different bits and pieces that are designed to make you realize just how diabolical this whole thing is. No one has been excluded in this, all these new health care packages. And, of course, this one is shocking. Shocking, mind you. The bill, ostensibly designed to save money, included a massive gift to the trial lawyers. For some time now, the federal government has been intensifying its pursuit of what are sometimes known as Medicare liens against third-party defendants. In the simplest scenario, not the only scenario, as we will see here shortly, someone is injured in, say, a car accident and has the resulting medical bill paid by Medicare. Then they sue and successfully obtain damages from the other driver. Now, at this point, Medicare, in other words, the government, is free to demand that the beneficiary hand over some or all of the settlement to cover the cost of the health care. But under some conditions, it's also free to file its own action to recover the medical outlays directly from the negligent driver, who in some circumstances might even wind up paying for the same medical bills twice. It might do this if, for example, if it does not expect to get a collectible judgment from the beneficiary. You see, the newly added language in the Thursday morning version of the health care bill, and for those following along, it's section 1620 on pages 713 to 721, would greatly expand the scope of these suits against third parties while doing something entirely new. Allow freelance lawyers to file them on behalf of the government without asking permission and collect rich booties or bounties if they manage thereby to extract money from the defendants. Lawyers will recognize this as a quitam procedure. If I pronounced it right, it looks like Vietnamese to me, quitam or quitam. Quitam procedure. Of the sort that has led to a growing body of litigation filed by freelance bounty hunters against universities, defense contractors, and others alleged to have overcharged the government. Ah, but my friends, it gets worse. Language on page 714 of the bill would permit the lawyers, to file at least some sorts of Medicare recovery actions based on, quote, any relevant evidence, including but not limited to relevant statistical or epidemiological evidence or by other similarly reliable means, end of quote. Well, you see, this reads very much as if an attempt is being made to lay the groundwork for claims against new classes of defendants who, well, just might not be proved liable in any individual case, but are responsible in a statistical sense. Best known such controversies are over whether suppliers of products such as alcohol, calorie-laden foods, or guns should be compelled to pay compensation for society-wide patterns of illness or injury. Now, apparently it looks like our friends the demagogues have temporarily pulled this language on objection from the Republic rats, though it could and probably will appear again in some other form. I mean, that's usually the way it takes place, is it not? Well, I think with all that we've shared with you this hour, and on yesterday's program, and many, many, many years of programming before, my friends, I submit to you that government has gone mad. Now, perhaps most Americans deserve the federal government they have, a government that, contrary to the lofty rhetoric of one brat, Hussein Obama, is pure politics as usual. A government that is as corrupted by moneyed interests as ever. A government that is as dysfunctional and inefficient as ever. A government that should have prevented the current recession, but did not. And now has spent horrendous amounts of money that has largely been wasted. A government that has put many future generations in debt. A government that makes a mockery out of the concept of democracy. As Robert J. Samuelson once aptly said, the federal $787 billion stimulus package is mostly a political exercise designed to claim credit for any recovery, shower benefits on favored constituencies, and signal support for fashionable causes. As a result, much of the stimulus's potential benefit has been squandered. The result is that most Americans hit hard by the recession have seen very few meaningful benefits. Unemployed not only has mounted, unemployment has not only mounted, but will surely keep increasing and may well approach 15% nationally before the end of the year. Indeed, it's already that bad in some places, such as Michigan. If there was ever something that should have sparked the second American Revolution, it would have been the Goldman Sachs story in this recession. Goldman Sachs, or as we've called them for many years around here, Goldman Sachs, reported that it earned $3.44 billion in the second quarter of 2009 and is preparing its largest bonus payout in history. Yeah, well, the key emphasis is on the word bone us. Did this company with so many former executives running the federal government's financial system manage this strictly on its own merits, my friends? Not hardly. It receives a $10 billion injection of TARP funds to help it handle the fiscal crisis. It was allowed to convert itself into a commercial bank and member of the Federal Reserve System, gaining access to low or zero cost capital at the Fed discount window and access to federally guaranteed borrowing through the FDIC Temporary Liquidity Guarantee Program. And it had the good fortune, literally, to receive a $13 billion payout of federal dollars at 100 cents on the dollar for its outstanding credit default swap contracts with AIG. Was all this recession garbage the change we were waiting for? Have we seen anything other than politics as usual? The answer, as you can well imagine, is no. You see, the entire Obama story and the Democratic control of Congress are a disgrace. So-called progressives who eagerly supported Obama should be ashamed of themselves. They should be leading a revolution, not making excuses for Count Chocula and the Democrats. The icing on the corruption cake will probably be phony and delusional health care reform, as stupid and deceptive as all the federal efforts at reversing the recession. It could not be clearer that most Democrats are totally under the thrall of the health insurance industry. How do you explain the incontrovertible fact that even though the U.S. spends more money per capita on health care than any other single nation, we have some of the worst health statistics of any nation. Simple. A huge fraction of the national spending on health care goes to the private health insurance industry. Does the United States offer some of the very best health care in the world? Yes. But unless you are wealthy or have terrific health insurance, or are Ted Kennedy or other members of Congress, you will not have affordable access to that terrific health care program. And so once again, our national statistics stink because such a huge fraction of the population does not get the first-rate health care and never will. When he campaigned, Barack Hussein Obama said he supported a single-payer universal health care program. But not now. You see, unless we get rid of the dominant private health insurance industry and replace it with an extension of Medicare, we will not get true and necessary reform, nor will we really see decreases in health care costs. And for me, I don't believe we're ever going to see it anyway. People in this nation are not going to get effective health insurance. It is a combination of problems with the AMA, the American Murder Association, the pharmaceutical industry, the two biggest lobbies that play their games on D.C. That's whose pockets are being lined. Honest, legitimate health care reform needs to come from the private sector, not the government sector. And as our author Joel Hirshhorn concludes, as I feared, Obama and the Democratic-controlled Congress are giving us government gone mad. Exactly what most Americans deserve. Don't hold your breath for the populist revolution. I'll be back in a few moments with some final comments.
I've been waiting for something to happen, for a week or a month or a year, with the blood in the ink of the headlines and the sound of the crowd in my ear.
Is the Second Amendment your line in the sand? Is the United States Constitution important to you? Are you worried about gun confiscation? You need to join us for free at gunconfiscation.com. At gunconfiscation.com, you will meet like-minded patriots, get the latest Second Amendment news, and find anything you need to prepare for gun confiscation. Visit gunconfiscation.com today. That's gunconfiscation.com. Which side are you on?
Hear one thing again and again, how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments are killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone. And there are lies in the balance.
It is truly impossible for someone to be a real conservative and be in favor of government health care, my friends. Regardless of or if you favor a so-called single-payer system or you want socialized medicine, if you favor Obama universal health care, which is modeled after the now bankrupt, only took 7 months, by the way, Hawaiian program that was set up for children only, all of these programs are a disaster, and only a liberal will argue otherwise. And while I'll agree that there needs to be reform of some type, I also believe that those reforms must not dismantle our current system, and they must be based on a free market solution. What we have attempted to lay out here in a few more minutes, lay out our case against government intervention. Amongst the reasons why I oppose government intervention, we've got a $12 trillion national debt, a $1 trillion 200 billion blah, blah, blah federal deficit in 2009. In the most simple of terms, we can no longer afford it. The idea that socialized medicine will save us in the long run is simply false. Eventually, we will hit a point at which we can no longer borrow. We already can never repay the debt back, so we're getting closer to that day. Secondly, profits fuel innovation. You ever wonder why liberals want to fund embryonic stem cell research and we have done amazing things with adult stem cells? I mean, there is nothing that is giant push demanding U.S. taxpayers fund adult stem cell research. We've had great success with adult stem cells, and there's not even a shred of research that shows that embryonic stem cells provide more promise than adult stem cells. In fact, the opposite is true. All George Bush ever said is that we would not use federal tax dollars to fund embryonic stem cell research. Nothing prevented private funds from being used. So don't you think if there was really a benefit, somebody looking to make a lot of money would have funded the research? Of course they would have. Number three, government, and I think this is one of the most important ones, they do nothing well. Drive around town today, take a good look at the road. Now I want you to remember that the same government that takes care of the roads wants to start handling your health care, my friends. Our politicians pass laws and make promises to gain power with no thought as to the long-term impact of those promises. And it's going nowhere. And therefore, we know that government does nothing efficiently. Remember that all the times you've heard about Medicare fraud and then realize that ultimately what the government wants is one giant Medicare program. Finally, go to your last check stub or tax return, see how much money you pay into the Medicare system, and realize that as of 2005, Social Security, Medicare, and the Medicare Prescription Drug Program represented thousands, millions, billions, trillions. I don't know what goes above trillions, but it's way too much. I can't count it. But it's like 46 gazillion, 400 trillion dollars of unfunded liability. What all of this means is these programs, long-term, are going to cost us that amount, and we simply no longer have the money to pay for them. Politicians, we all know, raided the so-called Social Security Trust Fund. It does not exist, people. There's nothing but a big IOU in its place. We can no longer afford it. In other words, our current social welfare programs are impossible to fund. The last thing we should do is give the government more to do, because they've obviously failed in doing what they've already taken on. And so without adding a single federal program since 2005, we've been on a collision course with a bleak future. Unfortunately, our government is spending more money at a faster rate than at any time in history, and the creation of new federal programs is happening at an almost dizzying rate. And yet, without all of this, we have been heading towards a point in 2040 where we'll only be able to pay little more than the interest on the federal debt and some of the existing entitlement programs. 2040? Welcome to 2009. We've already got it. We're here. I'll understand a couple of quick things here. Our government is like the person who, on their way to bankruptcy court, buys a fleet of new sports cars. The politicians today, my friends, only care about their power today. Many of them figure that in another 20 or 30 years, they'll either be dead or too old to care, which is why they're spending money and creating all of these programs right now, today. Now, if you don't care about your children and your grandchildren, then feel free to support all of Obama's fancy new social welfare programs. Go ahead. Believe him when he says we can just tax the rich to pay for it all, or raise taxes on cigarettes because you're just fooling yourself. Next time you're in the local convenience store, I want you to ask the clerk if the pennies in the little take-a-penny dish are free. When he says yes, I want you to then demand 86,000 pennies. I mean, he said they were free, so that means they must be unlimited, right? Let me share something with you. Countries with socialized medicine have politicians and bean counters, not doctors deciding what care you should receive. In America, our wallets make the decision, but in Britain, for example, even if you can pay for it, they won't provide it. America has the most fair system because if you work hard, then you will have. If you do not, then you will not. But under socialized medicine, you can be denied care, which will hasten your death. And then after you die, they'll take your money and use it to pay for someone else who cannot afford it. And so remember that if the federal government controls health care, then they will ultimately control the wages of health care workers. People sacrifice tens of thousands of dollars and work thousands of hours to become a doctor, and part of what makes them do that is the money. Take that away, we'll just end up with more lawyers. Fact is, the government will make the medical field a far less attractive place to work, which will cause a shortage of doctors, which will then cause a lowering of standards and ultimately bad doctors. Oops, that's not totally true. Then they'll be able to open up the coffers and a few more H-1B visas, etc., etc., and we can bring in more doctors from third world countries to ply the trades that our doctors once were able to do. So remember, my friends, if the government takes over health care, what happens to the millions of people who work in the health care industry? Gone with the wind, Jack. Do we want to create another industry that through government intervention has failed? I mean, the government has taken a bad situation with the automakers and thrown trillions of our bucks at it, and you know, frankly, they went bankrupt anyway. Do we really want them helping the health insurance industry? I don't think so. Does it mean we do nothing? Of course not. But this is not the answer. Stay with us here on Perspectives on America. At some point in time, well, we'll see if we can offer some solutions. But be prepared to act on those solutions. Don't just sit around waiting for whatever you think may or may not happen, or waiting for somebody else to do it. About time for us to bail on out of here. Thanks for being with us tonight. Lord knows what tomorrow's going to bring, but we'll try to make it interesting for you. Without apology, I am Jeffrey Bennett.
People who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste by going to rbnhemppaste.com. That's rbnhemppaste.com.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
Listening to Real Talk Radio, only on the Republic Broadcasting Network.